In the cinematic sea of prequels, sequels, reboots, and reimaginings, the Movie Retakes podcast considers the merits and desires for Hollywood's new takes on our beloved movie classics. Brothers Matt and Chris Sully examine the latest retake franchises, pitch their own original retake visions, and share their love for the movies that made them. This is Big Sully.
And this is Scaredy Cat Matt Sully. And joining us today, because it's a special horror Halloween October episode, is our resident
Bad Influence Sully.
Yeah, my wife, the Bad Influence.
Make you watch all the scary movies.
Say your name now.
Oh, Vanessa is my name. Hi again. And if Chris was here, I'd make him watch them too. As
don't
he
say
remembers.
It three times.
Yeah, you may recognize her from the Candyman episode. And we're following suit by having her on for our scary month. We're reviewing these franchises that make a shake in our boots. And we appreciate you coming by for another episode of Movie Retakes. This Movie Retakes episode is all about Scream!
Do you like scary movies, Sydney?
I like that thing you're doing with your voice, Randy. It's sexy.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Oh, come on. You know I don't watch that shit.
Why not? Too scared?
No, it's just, what's the point? They're all the same. Some stupid killer stalking some big-breasted girl who can't act, who's always running up the stairs when she should be going out the front door. It's insulting.
I don't think either of you wear boots.
I have boots.
Well,
I like that's what you
boots.
Took away from that. I do
Bootsy
not.
Collins.
I wear like snow boots, but not cowboy boots, which is ironic considering I have a giant orange foam cowboy hat.
Yeah.
You need matching orange boots.
I'm still waiting.
I'm going to make that happen.
Cowboy boots foam is on boots. My Christmas list.
Foam boots.
They're just those cheesy like Halloween costume ones that go over your regular shoes but don't actually touch the ground.
That's amazing. You have had cowboy boots on the list for quite a while.
Since I was 8 years old, and I've not received them for any Christmas. That's how I know there's no Santa Claus.
Little trivia, that's why he left Texas. Because he never got his boots.
That's right.
The great boot debacle.
The great boot.
I never came into manhood in Texas where you strap on the boots and then you are a true Texan. So I had
I'm
going to
get you boots for Christmas, but they're going to be the size you would have been when you were 8 years old.
Oh.
Ouch.
Your mom sent some for Isabel when she was about, what was she, two?
Oh, yeah.
They were really nice boots, little pink leather boots. And she sent her, like, the full cowgirl outfit. It was stinking cute. I'll have to send you a picture.
That was cute.
It was really, really
cute.
Had a
matching pink vest.
She had spurs. It was great.
Yeah. A lot of fringe.
All the fringe.
Would have bought her a pony, but could never get over Gone with the Wind.
Oh, man.
That's another horrifying movie. That
How
won't make this month's franchise.
Let's start off light.
Everybody dies on a horse. Spoiler. But if you are new to this program, welcome. But you need to start following us on all those lovely platforms, Twitter, YouTube, and subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform that you're listening to us right now. And hop on over to our website as well, movieretakes.com, and say hey. And leave some reviews. Reviews are very important, especially on Apple Podcasts. And we have a very special review we'd like to review with you.
Wow, Dr. Seuss. Thanks for that intro. We've got a great review from Toys R Us Kid. Who said, he titled it Ready, Set, Retake. I like that. And the review is, if you're a movie buff or even casual enthusiast, this podcast is for you. I appreciate the vast spread knowledge of pop culture between the Sully brothers and look forward to their sequel / retake pitches. Pitch, please.
Well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. What else is on this episode, bro?
Oh, yeah, we got a few questions we're going to answer as things go on. I love these because I don't read them in advance, so this is a surprise for me as well. What are we going to find out during this episode? Three questions. What actor from the first Scream appears briefly in all of the sequels? Mm. What Scream cast member was never met by the other actors? Ooh, I do know that one.
I know that one.
And what blockbuster films were scared to compete against a Scream sequel?
All very interesting, and I'm sure they'll be equally interesting when we answer those questions. It's a shame you already know the answer to one of them, but I guess that's nice too. A softball. Now, what you watching?
Oh, man. I can't even keep up. I need to keep like a little notepad to write down, because if I'm not podcasting or streaming, I'm watching something. Sadly, the season finale of Ted Lasso aired last week. If you're not watching Ted Lasso, it's the best thing on television this year. Watch it. It's amazing. Lovecraft Country got me a little bit back more on track this last week. I understand a bit more what's going on. Fear the Walking Dead. I got completely caught up on the series, ready for the new Walking Dead and the new spinoff show, and more Fear the Walking Dead coming soon. The seasons 4 and 5 of Fear the Walking Dead are fantastic. You can skip 1 through 3 and just pick up on 4 if you didn't like it but when you tried it before. The Boys, still catching up on that weekly. Hubie Halloween, I watched last night, that new Netflix movie with Adam Sandler. It's goofy, funny, exactly like you would think an Adam Sandler movie to be.
Yeah.
And it's worth got watching. Cameos from tons of people from the previous Adam Sandler movies.
I'm always on the fence when there's a new Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah, I he's got that deal with Netflix, and he's just cranking out content left and right. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I did fall asleep and had to pick up on it and watch it again this morning, but maybe that's what happens when you start a movie at 1 a.m. That's not the fault of the film.
That's not a very good endorsement.
Yeah, well, it happens to me more than a little these days. Utopia, a great new series on Amazon Prime. I watched last week and told Matthew about it, actually. It's got John Cusack and Rainn Williams in it, along with a great supporting cast. But it's about a couple of comic books and predictions of these viruses that will destroy mankind. Very, very interesting. I highly recommend you check that out. Podcasts, I stick with the basics, Mark Maron, WTF, and ID10T with Chris Hardwick, and then games. Playing Rocket League a lot because it's free for all now with some great new events. Fall Guys Season 2 lands today while we're recording this, so I can't wait to get into that tonight. And then a multitude of other games while I stream on Twitch.
That seems right. So they're calling it Season 2. Does that mean it just like resets for the competition sort of thing, or is it actual new gameplay?
They're introducing new maps and new map variants, courses, I should say, not maps, and new, you got these little outfits you can get for your bean.
Of course.
The lead player is a bean, but it's all like medieval. There's like knights and wizards and stuff like that. It's all medieval themed. So I'm really anxious to see what they do. Plus, the game got so popular during season one, I imagine they learned a lot. It'll be interesting to see what curveballs they throw us all now that we've gotten used to the gameplay. That their team seems to have a lot of fun with the game and their social media, so I bet they're going to have some fun with us.
That's cool. Yeah, that thing seemed to have just sort of blown up overnight. Everybody was into it all of a sudden. Well, and it reminds me a lot of, what was that, the Mario, like the mini games thing?
Oh, Mario Party?
Yeah, Mario Party, but then they also had that one that was like the weird little contests and stuff, but it's probably more
that we can never find again.
But it's probably more like Mario Party, and everybody had a lot of fun with that one. Well, obviously we watched. I don't know if it's obvious. This is we watched all 4 Screams.
We went for it.
Same. And oh, wonderful!
Nice. Oh, Daniel. Yeah. Okay.
Didn't watch the TV show at all, but I think that's all right.
The TV show a while ago because it's been on a little while. I think I watched like 3 episodes and I'm like, that was good. I'm done.
Yeah. 3 solid episodes.
It wasn't really bad. It wasn't for me.
Yeah.
Queens was great.
I liked Scream Queens. Yeah, I
did.
That
was really good.
It was fun.
We also watched The Naked Gun.
As you should.
Yes. Still very funny. What a great, great movie. I laugh way too much.
Yeah, you should be embarrassed at how much you laugh at that movie.
They're too good.
You know all the jokes.
I do, but they're all still really funny. We're the last season of Modern Family is finally available on Netflix, so we've been cruising through that because we had not seen those at all. And I've actually an episode behind you. You told me I need to watch because I'll boo-hoo. I imagine this is all like the goodbye episodes and people moving on and all that sort of stuff. Hopefully they don't do anything where like Jay dies at the end. They have a funeral or anything because was it like Roseanne did that?
You're in a very dark place this evening.
It's October.
It's perfect for Scream.
This is true.
I guess the opposite of that is I was watching The Good Place Season 4 that's also now available on Netflix.
I love that show.
Yeah, it's fun. I never know what they're going to do. It kind of seems like they never know what they're going to do either. And I kind of dig that. Kristen Bell's charming always.
You love her just a little bit.
Yeah.
She gets very nice, hotter very every year. I don't get it. I was surprised to see her pop up in the fourth Scream. And I looked at her and I was like, she's just too young and too tiny. Like, I like her better now.
Yeah. I mean, these things are so chock full of like every actor from all the different generations and stuff. It's crazy who all's in it.
The actor at the time.
Yeah. What else have we been watching?
More light fare. I watched Full Metal Jacket. Just because, you know, you have to. I watched on Netflix An American Murder, Family Next Door. That's like the documentary about that. Can I say a bad word?
No.
Okay. Chris Watts and how he killed his family. It's really, really good, but it's really heavy. But if you like that kind of a thing, true crime, highly recommend.
Why are you on me about dark stuff?
What?
One who's killing families over
Anywho,
here.
Anywho. So I'm also watching, I always watch Ghost Adventures, not just at Halloween. It's just good family fun.
Understood.
Yes. And my new obsession is Paranormal Caught on Tape, also on Travel Channel. I love that show. And then you mentioned Modern Family.
Yeah. Is that the one where they have like the artist that comes in and draws?
No, that's Dead Files. Oh. I don't watch that one as much. Paranormal Caught on Tape is basically like, people send in their videos. It's America's Funniest Home Videos, but with scary stuff.
Why didn't they call it that? America's Scariest Home Videos.
I feel like somewhere there's like an executive that just has these baskets of words on little pieces of paper, like murder and mystery and family and gore. And then they just toss it all up and then there's the new show.
Pretty much.
And then they just make it. There's how many of those? And podcasts, murder mystery podcasts is like its whole own huge genre these days.
Yeah, true crime podcasts. There are quite a few of those too.
Oh, what's that one? Can I give a shout out to another podcast?
Of course.
It's the one that I watch. I can't remember. Makeup. It's Makeup and Murder. That might not be right. I'll have to look up the name. I found it through Facebook, and it's this girl who's absolutely gorgeous. And she does these tutorials, like how to do your makeup and like contouring and stuff. But while she's putting on the makeup, she tells you a mystery, like real true crime, like about like Ted Bundy, real famous high profile murders. It is so engaging. I don't know how to describe it. Like, and they're only like anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes long. They're not very long, which is perfect for me.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
I'll have to look it up. It's perfect. And then she'll have real ones where it's just, her talking about the makeup, but mostly she's telling these horrible, horrible stories. And then by the end, she's like, look at me. She's gorgeous. It's funny. Anyway.
I'm so really pretty. Death, death, murder, murder, kill, kill.
Pretty much.
You look fabulous.
The story. You've seen her though. I mean, her makeup's amazing.
Yeah, she's really good at it.
What's it called? I'm going to look it up.
Go ahead. You look
That's
it up.
That's just efficient.
While you look it up, I'm going to make our segue into the next segment. So this episode's behind the scenes. I'm entitling Fear of the Unknown. We fear the unknown. While most terrifying unknowns may be the monsters behind our favorite horror films, it's their masks that are the real symbols of terror, and each comes with its own story. In 1925, Lon Chaney played the Phantom of the Opera. His mask scared audiences, but when his character removed it during the movie's premiere, viewers literally fainted in the theater. In the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Leatherface's mask of human flesh was actually three separate masks, identified as the personas Pretty Woman, Old Lady, and Killer. The late actor behind the chainsaw, Gunnar Hansen, said he changes faces depending on what he's trying to do. Hansen found it difficult to manage under the heavy latex and once knocked himself out cold when walking into a doorframe on set. John Carpenter was forced to make Halloween on a $325,000 budget, and his killer's costume choice reflected the need for cheap props. The art director for Halloween found a William Shatner mask in a magic shop in Hollywood. Carpenter painted it white, widened the eye holes, and Michael Myers was born. Though we all know Jason as the hockey-masked machete man, the iconic mask didn't come about until the third movie in the series. In an effort to avoid endless hours of makeup for their jumpsuited slasher, 3D supervisor Martin Sadoff joked that Voorhees could wear a hockey mask, which Sadoff happened to have with him at the time. In Happy Death Day, the killer's mask is an oversized baby face with wide eyes and a single tooth. Director Christopher Landon explains, "I was expecting my first son. I don't know if I just had babies on the brain or if I was subconsciously scared to become a father, but that baby image was floating around in my head. Tony Gardner, the creator of the mask, made us a pig mask too, but when I wore the baby mask in the office, I scared a coworker, and we thought, yeah, this is it. This is the one. The script for Scream described its slasher as ghost mask killer, though no one knew exactly what that would look like. While scouting for locations for the film, producer Marianne Medellina stumbled on the mask in an abandoned house. That's spooky by itself. The mass-produced mask was originally named Peanut-Eyed Ghost, but with the outrageous success of the Scream franchise, it would forever become known as Ghostface.
Wow, that is super creepy. I didn't know that about the mask. Yeah. And shout out to Happy Death Day. I love that freaking movie.
What?
Yes, it was because it's Groundhog Day was horror. Groundhog Day, it's so
yeah.
good.
Yeah. Okay.
Anytime you do Groundhog Day, like,
yep,
we're all for it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They do it in TV shows occasionally. I love that too. Bring it on.
I found the thing. Her name's Bailey Sarian, and it's called Murder, Mystery, and Makeup. Highly recommend, ladies. Check it out.
Good name. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's jump over into this giant franchise because we have a lot to review and talk about what we thought of the Scream franchise because we actually watched all of them. And,
all of us did.
Yeah, and then we can get to our pitches and the upcoming retake. So first off is Scream.
Who's there? I'm calling the police.
You should never say who's there. Don't you watch scary movies? It's a death wish. You might as well just come out here to investigate a strange noise or something.
A year after the murder of her mother, a teenage girl is terrorized by a new killer who targets the girl and her friends by using horror films as part of a deadly game. It stars Drew Barrymore, as you know, from E.T., Firestarter, everything. Charlie's Angels. Neve Campbell, who was big on Party of Five at the time. She's also in 54, Wild Things, and The Craft, along with Skeet Ulrich, who was also in The Craft, As Good as It Gets, on the Jericho TV series as well. And then Courtney Cox from Friends fame, and then later Cougar Town. W. Earl Brown, he was in Deep Impact. He played Dan Doherty in Deadwood. That's a lot of D's. And Rose McGowan, I may know from Planet Terror and Death Proof. He was Paige Matthews on, or I'm sorry, yeah, she was Paige Matthews on Charmed TV show. I was still thinking about W. Earl Brown there. And she was also in Jawbreaker. David Arquette's in this. He may know from Ready to Rumble, Never Been Kissed, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie. He's also the voice of Scully on Jake and the Neverland Pirates for you kids out there listening to this episode.
You're just getting mad, right? Better live her alone. Never alone. Ow, liver. It was a joke.
Matthew Lillard is in this. He was in 13 Ghosts, Hackers, Senseless. He played Dean Senseless. Boland on Good Girls, Scooby-Doo, the movie. He also voices Shaggy on a bunch of Scooby-Doo cartoon shorts and series. Jamie Kennedy's in here. You may know from Malibu's Most Wanted, Son of the Mask, Boiler Room. He was Professor Eli James on The Ghost Whisperer. He also voices Federline on The Cleveland Show. Henry Winkler is in this. You may know from Waterboy, Gene Cosano on Barry, and then Barry Zuckerhorn on Arrested Development, which he's so solid in that. And Dr. Saperstein on Parks and Rec, which also he's a great character on there. And the Fonz from The Happy Days. Hey! directed by Wes Craven, as are all the Screams. He also directed The Last House on the Left, The Hills Have Eyes, Swamp Thing, A Nightmare on Elm Street, New Nightmare, The Serpent and the Rainbow, and Vampire in Brooklyn. And I didn't even realize he had done Vampire in Brooklyn, so now I want to go back and watch that again. Because we just talked about that, I think, on the last episode. This was written by Kevin Williamson, who also wrote The Faculty, Teaching Mrs. Tingle, I Know What You Did Last Summer. He created shows like Dawson's Creek, The Following, Dawson's Creek, a fright in every episode, The Following, and The Vampire Diaries, which is just Dawson's Creek with pointier teeth, I think.
Pretty much.
This came out in 1996, if you can remember that far back, and made a whopping $173 million at the box office on a $15 million budget. Congratulations, dang. You win.
Yeah, really?
You got it right. And it's generally very low, 78% on Rotten Tomatoes.
$8 of that was from me.
Yeah.
Not back then. It was like, I went to the dollar theater. Scream 2, 2 years after the first series of murders, which I found kind of hilarious because the movie comes out like the next year. So I don't know if they were anticipating it was going to be 2 years later or whatever, but I think they just wanted to get out of high school. Anyway, 2 years after the first series of murders, as Sydney acclimates to college life, someone donning the ghost face costume begins a new string of killings. Nev's in this. Jamie Kennedy's in this. Courtney Cox, David Arquette. Now we get some new cast members. Jerry O'Connell, if you remember way back when, the fat kid from Stand By Me. He was also in Jerry Maguire.
Look, Kushlesh.
I'm on the big TV. Detective Woody Hoyt on Las Vegas. And also Quinn Mallory on Sliders. Somehow that show comes up a lot on this podcast as well. Laurie Metcalf is in here. You may know her from Uncle
Amazing
Buck.
Uncle Buck.
Yeah, she is.
Roseanne.
Marcy.
Marcy. I never lost the frost.
Yeah. She's also the voice of Andy's mom in the Toy Story movies. Lori Freeman on Norm. Mary Cooper on The Big Bang Theory. Jackie Harris on Roseanne and the Conners. Liev Schreiber is in here. He was from Ransom, Sphere, also X-Men Origins, Wolverine, Salt, and he does the voice of Spots on Isle of Dogs. And he's also the titular character, Ray Donovan on Ray Donovan. I'd just like to say titular. Jada Pinkett Smith, and this is where it gets strange to list cast members, is because they do this thing, just like Drew Barrymore in the first one, where it's kind of like, it's a fun thing to come in and be in the first 5 seconds of the film and then go away. So there's big names that are in here, but they don't really stay too long. So one of those is Jada Pinkett Smith. You'll know from the Matrix movies, Collateral. Oh, man, Collateral. Ali.
She's good in Collateral.
Also Ali. Man, that's solid. Bamboozled, Woo, Set It Off, Fish Money. She plays Fish Mooney on Gotham, which, crazy name. She's the voice of Gloria in the Madagascar movies. Omar Epps is in here briefly. You'll know him from Love and Basketball, The Wood, Higher Learning. He was Dr. Eric Foreman on House. J. Martin Bellamy on Resurrection, and he's on the upcoming TV show Power Book 3, Raising Kanan. I don't know anything about these, but I'm going to have to look into them because I keep seeing them pop up here and there in Power Books. Elise Neal, she was in Mission to Mars, Hustle and Flow. She played Tia Jewell in All of Us. Yvonne Hughley on The Hughleys. Sarah Michelle Gellar's in this. She'll know from The Grudge 1 and 2, Scooby-Doo 1 and 2. She was Buffy Summers on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And Kendall Hart on All My Children. You probably know her from there. Mm-hmm. Timothy Oliphant.
She's horrible.
You mean like her character was?
Yes. Oh, okay. No, she's a doll.
Yeah, she's really is charming. Timothy Oliphant, you know, from Go, Gone in 60 Seconds. Yeah, I know, he's sexy. Dreamcatcher. Mm-hmm. Seth Bullock on Deadwood. He was also in Hitman.
Ooh, we have to watch The Crazies.
The Crazies. Yeah, I was actually going to take a time out.
That's scary.
If you guys out there need some good scary movies for this month, The Crazies is where it's at. We're probably going to watch that one.
Watch that later. Yes.
Okay, let's do it. And Raylan Grimes on Justified. He also played Joel Hammond on The Santa Clarita Diet. This was, like I said, directed by Wes Craven. We get our writer, Kevin Williamson, again. And this is 1 year later in 1997. And this also did extraordinarily well. $172 million at the box office on a $24 million budget. So they're just
cranking them out.
Yeah. You're doing the right thing.
It is a little surprising they kept the budget down on the second one. Almost every time we've talked about this before, the second movie, the budget just jumps way up. And they barely moved.
I was expecting that as well.
Well, I wonder if there's a reason for that thing we talked about you're probably going to go over later.
Maybe.
That thing.
According to Rotten Tomatoes, it's liked even more than the first one.
No.
At 81%. I disagree as well, but you know.
Wholeheartedly disagree.
Moving on to Scream 3. Never mind. While Sydney and her friends visit the Hollywood set of Stab 3, the third film based on the Woodsboro murders, another Ghostface killer rises to terrorize them. Liev, Nev, Courtney, David, Jamie sorta is in this, which that was rough. Kelly Rutherford is part of the new cast. You might know her as Lily Vanderwoodson on Gossip Girl.
She was great.
What a fantastic last name. Can we change your last name? I don't know. I like Sully, but Vanderwoodson's where it's at.
We'll do a hyphen. Sully Vanderwoodson.
Megan Mancini on Melrose Place. She's also Sam Whitmore on Generations. Yeah. This is why I list multiple things. Patrick Dempsey joins us here. And before he was dreamy, he was just that little geeky kid that we had for Can't Buy Me Love and Loverboy. And those are both great movies. They hold up, too. They're a lot of fun. He was also in Sweet Home Alabama, played Dr. Derek Shepherd on Grey's Anatomy. Then we get Scott Foley. I think we'll get another tongue roll from you for that one. Okay. Noel Crane on Felicity. He played Jake Ballard on Scandal. They took way too many pictures on Scandal. Lance Henriksen is in this. You'll know him as Bishop. And Charles Wayland from the Alien movies. Frank Black on Millennium. He was also in Powder, The Quick and Dead, Man's Best Friend, and Pumpkinhead. Josh Pais, I guess that's how you say it.
Pais.
Pais. It's a lovely Mexican dish. do you have any Josh Pais on the menu? He was in Joker, Syrup, Gentlemen Broncos, Adventureland, Rounders. He played Assistant M.E. Borak, is that right? On Law and Order, and Hank Abraham on Law and Order SVU. I can't imagine that you're playing different characters on and quite a few episodes on essentially the same show. That's got to be confusing at some point. Jenny McCarthy is in here. May know her from Basketball. She was Jenny McMillan on Jenny. We knew her from MTV days. What was that game show? The Love something?
Oh, it was with Chris Hardwick.
Yeah, that's right.
It was the dating show where Chris Hardwick was
singled out.
Singled out. There you go.
You get the point.
And then Carmen Electra took over.
Oh. All right.
Now you do the Return Girl.
No, that's cool. Dean Richmond is in here from a Not Another Teen Movie. Jordan Bennett on Sisters. Darren Dixon on Getting By. Kenny on The Cosby Show from way, way back.
Excuse you. It's Bud.
Yeah.
Yep.
Matt Kessler is in here. He was in the Dune miniseries, Urbania, The Last Days of Disco, and Waiting for Guffman. Emily Mortimer from Lars and the Real Girl, Pink Panther 1 and 2, Ghosts in the Darkness. The voice of Holly Shiftwell on Cars 2. Great name. Mackenzie McHale on The Newsroom. That was short-lived, but I think that was a show we liked.
It wasn't short-lived. We just didn't watch very much.
Short-lived for us. Parker Posey from Sweetest Thing, Mighty Wind, Dazed and Confused. Patrick Warburton, who's the voice of Joe Swanson on Family Guy. Also Lemony Snicket on the Series of Unfortunate Events television show. Voice of Brock Sampson on The Venture Brothers, which was an outstanding cartoon. Jeff Bingham on Rules of Engagement. Voice of Kronk on The Emperor's New Groove, which you cannot argue this, but it is a fantastic movie. And David Putty on Seinfeld.
High five.
High five. We both do it.
You got to get the undercoating.
Oh, my God.
Still directed by Wes Craven, which I have a hard time believing, but we'll get into that. But we miss out on our writer, Kevin Williamson, here. We get Aaron Kruger instead, who, you know what, had some good stuff on his resume. Arlington Road, The Ring 1 and 2. He wrote 3 of the Transformers, which I don't know that there's any writing involved in those. Dumbo from 2019, and also wrote the upcoming Top Gun Maverick. So we have mentioned him before.
That's how you say that name. Ehren. Ehren.
Yeah, like you're already exhausted saying Ehren.
Because they're nice.
Kruger. This came out in 2000. Sorry, Ehren. But it made money. $161 million. So it doesn't matter what our opinion is. It still made a bunch of money. Did raise the budget a little bit. $40 million. But sorely, yeah, people did not like it. 39% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's not good.
It ain't good.
It ain't good.
It's the weakest of the series, I think.
Yeah, more like Yawn 3. Scream 4. Sorry. Sorry, everybody.
That was a
Vanessa's going to take over for this
episode.
She kills you and knocks you out of the room.
Scream 4. 10 years have passed, and Sydney Prescott, who has put herself back together thanks in part to her writing, is visited by the Ghostface Killer. It's nice to see old friends. We still get Nev, David, Courtney, and Liev, who keeps autocorrecting to Liv, so that's your name now, Liv. And Allison Brie is in here.
Do your thing. I'll even do it for that.
I love Allison Brie. She goes nice with a side of me. Ruth Wilder on Glow, which we gotta get a universal sad face here because they
canceled Glow.
I can only hope that this is not a cancellation, but a hiatus, and they will return.
It's so good.
I don't see how you can cancel Glow. That is just
so good.
It's so good.
Yeah,
and so, it was just getting really good. Like, it was getting really dramatic. It was always really good. No, it was funny, but then it started getting, like, more character development. And I really liked the characters.
Yeah. But Alison Brie is a brilliant actress. Surprisingly so, because first glance, you're like, yeah, she's not any good.
Well, we first saw her in Community, right?
Yeah.
And she's kind of nothing.
Annie.
But she was also Trudy Campbell on Mad Men. Yeah. She did fantastic there. Yeah, she was Annie Edison on Community. We also get Emma Roberts in this. She,
I don't like her.
Emma Roberts?
Mm-hmm.
See, I did not care for her in this. She's growing on me.
She's in Scream Queens. We talked about that before.
Yeah, okay. Well, I didn't watch that. Mm-hmm. She was okay in this. That's one of the things we'll talk about. She was in Blow, Nancy Drew. She was Addie Singer on Unfabulous, Chanel Oberlin on Scream Queens, and she was also in quite a few of the American Horror Stories.
That's right.
Anthony Anderson, from Hustle and Flow, Transformers, Barbershop 1 and 2. He was Detective Kevin Bernard on Law and Order. Everybody's on Law and Order. I was on Law and Order. Andre Johnson on Blackish. I was not on Blackish. Hayden Panettiere. She'll know from maybe Bringing On All or Nothing. Lizzie Spaulding on Guiding Light. Juliet Barnes on Nashville. And Claire Heroes. Bennett on Heroes.
Save the cheerleader. Save the world.
Rory Culkin, the... Rory. Sort of the was that the Stephen Baldwin equivalent of the Culkins, I think. He was Richie Rich and on Signs, and I'm pretty sure
he was in Signs. It was when he was little. Yeah, yeah. But
that was the peak of his career. Amy Teagarden. Yeah, he's fine.
She was on Friday Night Lights, right?
Yeah, that's in my whole thing here.
She was
Call of the Wild as well, Rings, and she was Julie Taylor on Friday Night Lights, but that's been ruined for us. Thank you, Vanessa. Marley Shelton's in this, which you may remember from The Sandlot, Pleasantville, Bubble Boy, which if you haven't seen Bubble Boy, that movie's freaking awesome. It's hilarious.
It's great.
I don't know where you can find it, but if you can, please find it and watch it. Rampage. Mariel Jaffe is in this as well. She's from Percy Jackson, The Olympians, The Lightning Thief. Eric Knudsen, from Saw 2, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. He was Dale Turner on Jericho, but that was so long ago, I can't really remember other people other than like Skeet on there. Nico Tortorella, who's Jacob Wells on The Following, Josh on Younger. Felix Carlucci on the upcoming Walking Dead World Beyond. So we're going to see some more of him. And Adam Brody, finally. You might know as Seth Cohen on The OC, he's on Shazam, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and Ready or Not, which will tie into the upcoming reboot or retake or remake or whatever. This was Wes Craven's final movie. And that's very sad because... what a huge uptick from three, and it was life. Yeah, and it was nice to have him kind of rounding out his own franchise here for this. And we got Kevin Williams sitting in, so the writing is back on point. This came out in 2011, did not do as well at the box office, and I think maybe that comes down to Scream 3 kind of spoiling it. But there was also a huge gap in time, which I think maybe you'd lost, I don't know, yeah.
Momentum.
Maybe momentum. It made $91 million, so I guess you can't complain. But it was a $40 million budget, so not the huge gap that we saw from the other ones. And 60% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I guess we'll discuss what we think of that. And also, there's a Scream series. This is a serialized anthology series that follows a group of teenagers being targeted by a masked serial killer. We all know the story. But it actually changes from season to season. There's different killers and stuff. This stars... Now, it's going to star a bunch of people because it's an anthology, so I'm just listing off the people that were in the most episodes. Willa Fitzgerald, Bex Taylor-Klaus, John Carna, Carlson Young, Tracy Middendorf, Amadeus Serafini. Cool name. And yeah, a bunch of other people that started in 2015 and is still and the rest. Yeah, and the rest. It was like one other two people or whatever. It's like, why don't you just list everyone? And yeah, just to wrap it up for that, it is pretty well rated as well on IMDb. It's a 7.2. Yes. Hmm.
A little bit of trivia. Do you know who Adam Brody's married to?
No.
You want to do another tongue roll?
Yeah.
Leighton Meester. It's Blair.
Oh.
Oh, I do love Blair.
From Gossip Girl. Uh-huh. Another Gossip Girl reference. Every time he'd walk in, I'd be watching, he'd go, oh, Blair.
Oh, Blair.
What are you up to,
what
Blair?
What kind of crazy shenanigans are you doing now? Yeah, so let's talk about these. What do you think?
Should we rate them?
Yeah, I have a star rating.
It goes top is the first one,
mm-hmm.
then the third one, then the second one, then the did I do that wrong?
I think you did that wrong.
The first one, then the fourth one, excuse me.
Yeah.
Then the second one, then the third one. The second one. I didn't think the second one was very good. The third one, me and you both wanted to turn it off after about 15 minutes.
The third one
what
was...
What is even happening?
That was rough.
I think I'm 1, 2, 4, 3. I like 2 better than 4.
Really?
See, I like 2 as well, but I've been thinking about it, and I think a lot of what made 2 good is leaning on...
1.
Leaning on 1 and how much we liked 1.
Are you suggesting that someone's trying to make a real-life sequel?
Stab 2? Who'd want to do that? Sequels suck.
No, come on, man.
Oh, please, please. By definition alone, they're inferior films.
But yeah, standalone, it's not as strong. It's still good, but the first one, yeah, is the best one for just a ton of reasons. It all just comes together really cool. I guess it was so fresh then. It may not feel that way now to people because we have so many varieties of horror film. But when this came out, it really was kind of a reinventing of horror for a whole new generation. Wes leaned into that pretty hard on getting the young audiences in on this, and that was a smart move. And while making fun of the genre that he helped make, and that's really cool that you can do that. For me, I gave it 4 stars. It's really strong.
The series as a whole?
No, the first one. Scream 1 is 4 stars. The second one I gave 3 stars because I still enjoyed it. Third one I gave 1.5 stars, and I cannot recommend this to people. And I think, honestly, you can comfortably skip it within the storyline as well.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
like there's nothing you really get from this that that you need going into the fourth one. So you can do sort of a Rocky 5 here and just go 1, 2, and 4. And, the numbers are all off, but you know what I mean. I remember when that came out, though, it was strange because Drew Barrymore was the big name, and she was all over the poster and stuff, so we thought this was a Drew Barrymore picture, and then she dies within the beginning, which
I think that's part of the brilliance.
I think, cool.
I totally agree. If I remember right at the time, because we worked at video stores around that time, the horror movies were not mainstream A-list films. They were the straight-to-video or limited-release films, with the exception of, can we squeeze out another Friday the 13th or another Nightmare on Elm Street? That was it. Or Child's Play at the time. Those are the only ones that got a little bit bigger welcome from the cinemas and from the fans. So this really did become mainstream horror, and it bred an entire generation, like you said, of new horror films and new horror types. They even reference in the third one or fourth one, they start referencing the Saw films, which think they help bring back. I think they help make the Saw films possible by starting the Scream series.
You're right. Like I remember people coming in and asking for horror, and that was like, it was... I think I mentioned this in one of the behind the scenes segments in another episode, as horror was kind of looked upon as sort of the low brow entertainment.
Yeah.
And that's a shame because there is this was a fun horror film. Mm-hmm. Like I know I'm kind of a scaredy cat on a lot of this stuff, but that's what I really like about Scream. And another thing I don't think people it changes things up. So rather than just being, and you don't really know this when you're watching the first Scream, you're used to the it being one killer. And so they changed that up. They also made it kind of a murder mystery where instead of a killer is on the loose killing everybody, you want to figure out who is it that's killing everybody. Yep. Not just, I know it's, you know, Jason or Freddy or whatever. We don't know this person's name. We don't know the motivations or anything like that. And so that, to me, also makes it fresh. And I think that's a lot of fun. I like a good murder mystery. I can go to that all the time. And I think one is a lot of fun and four is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so if you're going to check these out, then definitely recommend one and four. And you can check out two as well. I think there is some of the story in there for the character development, and you know, we lose Randy, which, you know, I think people were arguing about whether or not that was a good move or not, but because for some he was kind of the grounding of sort of the meta of it, I guess, and
with the rules.
Have an aneurysm, why don't you?
There are certain rules that one must abide by in order to successfully survive a horror movie. For instance, number one, you can never have sex. No. Big no-no!
Dang,
man. Sex equals death, okay? Number two, you can never drink or do drugs. No, the sin factor. It's a sin. It's an extension of number one. And number three, never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
I'm getting another beer. You want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back.
Oh! You see, you push the laws and you end up dead. Okay, I'll see you in the kitchen with a knife.
And so losing him was kind of where it treated it differently after that. I had a hard time believing that Wes directed the third one, because everything about this was just a disaster.
Yeah, it had like four different stories. It didn't know what it wanted to do,
and
at all.
But there was times where I'm watching a scene and I'm like, that just seemed like sort of a test run. That's not the thing that you actually would put there. You know, that's the first take, and then you get some direction after that. It's like he didn't even show up.
How long did that one take to make? Maybe they just threw it together.
Well, I do know that they had to change. We'll find out from the trivia. They had to change the story. And there was a ton of constant rewrites and writing 5 minutes before they were going to film stuff. So it was just all around. So
it was just jinx from the beginning.
Yeah, plus, it was never.
You never know what's going on in their personal life around that time. You know, maybe he had to, maybe he was focused on some other things and had to dial it in a little bit.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I could comfortably skip. I know, I'm being kind of a movie snob here, but I could comfortably skip two and three. I think one and four are the stars of the show.
Ooh.
I think that this fell into the trap of just rehashing the same jokes, for lack of a better word, that came from the first one. There was nothing really surprising about it. You knew there was going to be a twist. You knew it was going to be something related to, I did anyway, like, you know, to what happened in the first one. And I thought it ended up being Billy. What should I say?
I don't think it matters. These are ancient.
Statute of limitations is up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Billy's mom coming back for revenge. I thought that was kind of I didn't think that was needed.
Well, know? Yeah, because
I thought that was kind of a cop out. Because in the first one, he talks about his mom abandoning him. She's not going to come back and avenge him. She didn't care about him. So, like, I think that didn't make so much sense to me. So, I like one, and then I think she would be traumatized enough for her to have to want to write that book and for the fourth one to still make sense that she's traumatized. Her mom still got murdered. All that stuff still happened in the first one. You know what I mean? So she could still write that book and come back and still be traumatized by that town in part four. And if there were that long of a break between the first and the fourth one, that's more shocking.
Right.
To me.
And I don't...
Not every few years. She's waiting for it. It's too much.
And it kind of does that thing where when you do a murder mystery, you have to give us clues that we could possibly solve this. There was no indication that she was related to Billy at all. Like that was one of these kind of, we're going to explain it all in the end, but that's unfair. Mm-hmm. Like we're here as detectives in a way, as viewers. We want give us the clues, help us along, and at least give us a shot at it. There was no way anybody could have guessed.
No.
What that was.
I agree.
Yeah. So that was kind
of. Yeah. I always wonder if that happens as a result of the editing. Like, did somebody go in and just crop a little too much out, you know, for the sake of time?
That's true. Could be.
Could be.
The fourth one, the only problems I had with it is that it was referring to itself as a reboot or a remake and going on those rules. But for me, I don't think it was. I think that's untrue, especially because in most cases, you don't have any of the original cast members. You might have one, but usually that's more of a passing the torch kind of thing. That's not necessarily a reboot. Right. So I don't think that was the proper usage of those. And I think, wasn't it Emma?
Emma Roberts.
I struggled with her. I accepted it in that her in that role, but ultimately I think somebody else could have done that better.
Was she the cousin?
Yeah, she was the cousin.
Okay.
I liked her. I thought she was brutal at the end.
I didn't like her in the early parts of the film because we were supposed to side with her. She was supposed to be in the idea of a reboot or a retake. She was supposed to become the lead.
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. And I didn't feel like we were getting into her camp. And then at the end, I'm like, oh, okay, I like her as the reveal. I thought that was fun, but.
Yeah. Okay. Did you have any star ratings on this?
Mine aren't too far off from yours. I'll go a little bit higher. Probably go 4.5 on the first one. I'd probably go 2.5 to 3 on the second one. I agree the third one was the weakest. I'll go 2 and 4, I think, was a nice uptick again. I'll go with 3 on the fourth one. But what I like and what I noticed more and more, because our habits as viewers have changed dramatically over the last 5 to 10 years with the advent of Netflix and Hulu and the ability to stream things. Before, like 10 years ago, if you wanted to watch these, you had to own the set or you had to go out and rent them. Now we can I just rented them from Amazon. And to be able to sit down and watch all 4 almost in one sitting, it's like watching one giant movie. And I think that changes the conversation a little bit. So you almost have to rate it as an overall series. And I would give it a higher rating as an overall series and say probably like 4. Because I really, really enjoy these, and I love what they did, and I love how when you look at them in that way, through 4 films, you get everything from 1996 to 2011. That 15 years, a lot changed. Not only did Courtney Cox grow from what looked like a 20-year-old to a 50-year-old, no offense, but she definitely aged, and watching, because I still think she's gorgeous, but... And watching technology change. The first film, everybody had regular landlines, and cell phones were this, like, they asked the one kid, why do you have a cell phone? Like, it was an oddity. Yeah. And then by the fourth one, they're talking about Facebook and Twitter, and she's on her, like, vintage keyboard flip-out phone. But then they show iPhones. iPhones were just starting to come into play, really, to be a thing. And I love how the franchise had to evolve a little bit to answer to some of those things. And I thought they did a pretty darn good job. Because we talked about it in our last few episodes, like how do you answer to everyone having access to cell phones in these do or die circumstances where they need help? And I thought they did a pretty good job of integrating it into the story. Overall, I really like the films, and I'm glad we rewatched them because I don't think I would have otherwise for years to come.
I agree, and this was actually our first viewing of 3 and 4. I'd never seen them before.
No way.
Yeah.
No, I told you I'd seen 4. Oh, I'd never seen 3.
You'd seen 4. I'd never seen 3 and 4.
I think I saw them all at the theater.
I was unsure.
Oh, really?
If I had seen...
I only saw 1 at the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I vaguely remember I must have been at somebody's house when they were at the end of Scream 3. I think I had seen the end of Scream 3, but that was it.
You knew the killer?
Yeah. I didn't remember.
Spoiler.
Yeah,
do you remember
now? Yes, I did. Another thing that we possibly couldn't have guessed. So that was kind of a ruinous for that too. So overall, we're going to recommend this franchise, and this is a great one. We found it on Amazon as well. All 4 were available there, so you should go and watch this. If you're looking for some scary movies to watch, this is good as a franchise. You watch the whole thing. And we're going to get Scream 5 eventually. Now, before we get to the retake, we're going to do our own original pitches for Scream. And I think you're first this time.
I am. Before we get to them, I do want to throw in a keyword for a future giveaway. So jot this down or remember that they're here for when we do have a giveaway, which... we are planning right now for a fun Halloween giveaway, so stay tuned. That's coming soon. The keyword this week is a little bit more on the nose. The keyword is stab.
Good one.
You could guess it, but I don't think you will. I bet most people will type in Ghostface and those entries will be deleted immediately. All right. Just well, if they haven't started filming Scream 5, I've got the script for you. I'm quite happy with the way mine turned out, so prepare yourself now. The title of mine is simply going to be Scream 5. I joked about maybe putting a 5 in place of the S, but it just looks weird. So no, Scream 5 is what it's going to be. I'm going to go totally meta on this one, and I want Robert Rodriguez to direct. Because in the fourth one, they make they let you know that Stab was directed by Robert Rodriguez. I think it would be perfect, and I think he could have some fun with it.
That would be cool.
I have a script. I have the outline ready, right? I don't know where she fits in, but somewhere I want Alexandra Daddario to be in this film. I don't have the specific role for her, but she's turned into like my new favorite horror queen. If you don't know who she is, you should look her up. She's got some great roles, and she's done a couple of horror films already. I want her to be in it. But here is my synopsis for Scream 5. From the late 90s to the early 2010s, the Stab movies went from based on a true story box office gold to straight to lower tier streaming services and eventually fizzled into oblivion. Even the sleepy town of Woodsboro had seemingly given up on Ghostface. But as a horror icon, Stephen King wrote, "Sooner or later, everything old is new again." It's 2020 and the world is in total chaos. Thanks to a global pandemic, fires, hurricanes, and a comical presidential race, most of the U.S. finds themselves quarantined to their homes, spending more time consuming content and playing video games than ever before. Live streaming platforms and creators have become the new king of media, as predicted by Robbie Mercer in Scream 4. Sometime in early 2010s, shortly after Stab 7, a Stab video game had been released, but never really took off. Now, with a generation of teens looking for something to occupy their time at home, the game has somehow made its way into the top games list on Twitch. Even with its clunky graphics and basic gameplay, it's become one of the hottest commodities in gaming. Tens of thousands of viewers are watching streamers play it on platforms like Facebook, Twitch, and YouTube. Given the popularity of the game, the company that created it decides to create some new levels and start promoting it again. They reach out to some of the stars of the Stab franchise and ask them to participate in a series of Stab Live online events, kind of like Comic-Con panels, and play the game for fans. They also manage to convince Sidney Prescott, Gail Weathers Riley, and Dewey Riley, who still live in Woodsboro, to participate. A date is set and announced. Interest in the game continues to spike. A couple of weeks before the big event, it starts. Well-known streamer Shaolin is playing the Stab game in front of 20,000 plus viewers when messages from a user known as G-Face appear in his chat. Fans point out how great the name is, and of course Shaolin comments on it as well, drawing more attention to the user. Messages from the user start out harmless, but then escalate to the classics. Do you like scary movies? What's your favorite scary movie? What comes to mind? At first it's funny, but makes everyone a little anxious. Shaolin threatens to ban the user, who replies with, "Ban me and you'll die." Of course, G-Face immediately gets banned and reported, but another user with a very similar name pops up immediately and continues the same threatening line of messaging. Just about the time Shaolin has had enough and decided to end his stream early, a shadowy figure appears behind him. But by the time his fans can comment to warn him that Ghostface is in the house, he's stabbed through the back of his high-end gaming chair. All 20,000 viewers see the gruesome murder and watch as the life slowly leaves Shaolin's body. Many believe it to be a hoax or marketing campaign for the game, but authorities are called and enter the home to find the body of the streamer. The shadowy figure has had plenty of time to escape by now. The authorities end the stream, and in minutes, the news travels the world through social media and then gets picked up by traditional news stations. The headline, "Ghostface Returns," spreads like wildfire across the world. By that evening, the number one gaming being live-streamed around the country is Stab. While the smart thing to do would have been to avoid the game for fear that this might not be an isolated incident, people did the exact opposite. They want to build their audience, and everyone is watching streamers play the game. It turns out to definitely not be an isolated incident. The next few murders happen in very similar fashion to streamers in several different cities. Some are celebrities with millions of followers, and some have just had a few viewers at the time of their demise. Each time, the username that harasses the streamer is different, but always similar to Ghostface in some way. By the third death, streamers take numerous precautions to avoid their potential death, but this incarnation of Ghostface gets around them every time. No amount of prep seems to be enough. Despite warnings from officials and news outlets, the popularity of the game continues to rise, and people who have never streamed before or watched game streams find their way to the platforms where the game is being played. Twitch, Facebook, YouTube take the game off their lists, but people stream it under a different name. The game creator takes the game down off of Steam, but people share the install files via file sharing services. People just won't stop. During all this, Gale, Sydney, and Dewey watch in fear. But they aren't going to just sit back and watch everything unfold without using their experience to try and figure out who the killer is. As with every other iteration of Ghostface, there must be a plan, some rules, some strategy to what is happening, and how this killer will eventually try to include the same three people that have been a part of every killing spree before. The date for the first Stab Live event nears, and the game company behind Stab contacts the stars they've lined up about canceling. They simply can't risk it or promote the game, given the state of things. All the stars agree, but on the date that the first live was supposed to happen, actress Amy Teagarden goes live on Twitch. She's never streamed before, but within minutes of her stream going live, there are hundreds of thousands of people watching. A welcome scream is live for nearly 10 minutes before we see her appear, duct taped to a chair. A familiar voice comes over the stream, clearly being broadcast from a phone. Amy's phone, in fact. The voice toys with the audience for a few minutes before gutting Amy live for the world to see, and the stream ends. Her body's found later that day. Investigators work hard day and night to track down the killer, but somehow they're able to avoid the authorities every step of the way. A multi-state killing spree spanning weeks, even with all the technology available today, is still impossible to solve in a short amount of time. It's Gale that first figures out the pattern. While the streamers were seemingly random, she digs up enough information to find the pattern. The first victim, Shaolin, was actually named Stephen Stone, which was the name of the fourth victim in Scream 3. And each of the other streamers killed share a name with a previous victim, Randy Meeks, John Milton, Sarah Darling. Upon further investigation, the murders were happening in an almost straight line across the country leading towards Woodsboro. And Amy's murder, the latest in the series, had taken place just 100 miles away. The killer was clearly headed to Woodsboro. By the time Gale shares her findings with Sydney, Dewey, and the rest of the Woodsboro Sheriff's Department, it's too late. Authorities from other states are alerted, but won't be able to get there in time to do anything. Based on the pattern so far and the location of her last kill, Ghostface must be there already. It's at that moment that all three of our leads receive a text message with a link to a live stream. A click of the link reveals a different view for each of them. Sydney sees Dewey tied up with Ghostface standing by in a message that reads, "Come alone or he dies," while Dewey and Gale see Sydney tied up with a similar message. Since they're all not together, they can only assume that the person who is tied up in the stream has had their phone taken and is not really who they think has been chatting with them. One thing they do all see is a familiar house, the one from the first Scream movie where Tatum died. They all race to the house and arrive at about the same time. Of course, there's some confusion as to how they're all there, but they know that Ghostface must be there. They try to call in reinforcements, but their phones can't get a signal. The sounds of a ringing phone come from inside the house. And, having gone through this several times, they all reach for the nearest item to serve as a weapon and head in. Cameras are installed throughout the house, and the world is now watching. They enter the house and find Ghostface costumes hung throughout every room. Gale starts smashing cameras, and that draws out the real Ghostface. I thought that was smart on Gale's part. Fast forward through an epic battle, I'm not going to write all that out, that spans several minutes and eventually ends with Ghostface getting stabbed by his own knife. The mask is pulled back to reveal a familiar face, at least for Sydney. The killer was Simon O'Dowd. Oh my God, y'all are staring in the camera. One of the producers of the Stab series and game. He had invested millions of his own money into the Stab franchise after the third film, hoping to capitalize on the success of the first three films, only to be shut down by a lawsuit that Sydney had filed, which resulted in the studio not being able to use the original story or her characters in future films. He had doubled down on the game, which, when unsuccessful, caused him to go bankrupt, losing everything, including his family, in the process. He had planned everything out to make the game successful and had let things go a little too far, thinking he'd kill off the people that had caused him so much loss and still get away with the profits. Mm. Roll credits.
That was nice. Yeah, so you got the tech is appropriate for the time period, plus... Mm-hmm. That seemed, you're right, that was something he did as kind of a theme. He was always aware of what the modern technology was and incorporated it.
That was perfect for you.
Yeah, that was great.
I liked it.
Yeah, I had some experience with this now, so it all made a lot more sense.
Now I'm very nervous watching you.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking behind you the whole time.
All the doors locked. It would
have been great if we did it live and just a ghost face appeared I got kind of stabbing through the chair scene.
We should have dressed it.
I really struggled with whodunit. I almost worked in like a who's the family member, but I realized that had been done so many times.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Do we need another cousin or brother to pop up? It's just like, no.
How could there be any more family members?
No, they're all dead.
Yeah. And I thought maybe earlier in the movie there could be some references or flashbacks to, because they mentioned it in 3 or 4 how she had sued so they'd stop using, I think it was in 4, when they were making fun of Stab 6 leading into Stab 7. If they could show that a little bit more, maybe how she got the money from the lawsuit or something, then it would make more sense tying into the end of the film. But
yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, I remember that tidbit from them talking about her, they weren't able to use her story anymore or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was good.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'd watch that.
Sorry, it was a bit lengthy. I couldn't stop once I got going there.
No, it was good.
That's great. I was struggling on this. I was all over the place because I didn't know. Prior to seeing the 4th one, I'm like, well, if they don't talk about reboots and remakes, then that would be perfect for this. Yeah. But then they did. I'm like, dang it.
He was very upset.
Dang you, Rory. You're the Culkin nobody wanted. And then I was like, okay, well, it's similar to you. I'm like, well, maybe we do like a Wes Craven's New Nightmare and we pull it into the real world, the people that are making, so like actually Neve Campbell, and it's, you know, about her, and then somebody in real life is coming after Neve Campbell. But it ended up going that route. I actually cheated a little bit because I found some references to mostly around Matthew Lillard, where...
you want to tell that before or after?
Well, it's in here. I'm going to list him in the cast anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Where he's actually in, to answer our trivia or questions up from the beginning, he's actually in all 4 movies. Now, that it may be a stretch. In the 2nd movie... his face, he's at a party, like out of focus, very briefly. He's at the college party because he was visiting on set and just happened to be in there. In the 3rd one, he, now this is the stretch because I couldn't find anything to back it up, but somebody has stated that his voice is used in some summary of the killings or something like that. And in the 4th one, he's at a party again. He's at the Stabathon. He's in the background again because he was visiting on set. And I think the dude just really wants to be a part of these movies. And we have, I think it's part of the trivia, but he was actually supposed to be in the 3rd one. He was going to come back. And so I am borrowing that concept. And so for the cast of what I'm calling Scream 5 has Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, David Arquette, and Matthew Lillard. And Lawrence Hecht, who played Nev's father, Sydney's father. And the rest of the cast, they can all be whoever's popular modern young actors. But for my opening, I'm choosing Sandra Bullock.
You know, they have the, there it is.
They have the
who
little
was
fun...
referenced in the movies.
I hate scary movies. I should be studying. You know I got a bio.
Baby, did I mention that these tickets are free? Free.
Sandra Bullock is playing right down the street.
Nobody would pay $7.50 to see some Sandra Bullock shit.
Yeah. So they have like the little fun opening. So there'll be a fun opening. And Sandra Bullock will be in that part, and she won't be in the rest of the movie. The director, I'm going with Drew Goddard, who did The Cabin in the Woods.
Another great, fun, scary movie. Watch it right now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Love and that. I heard he also did Bad Times at the El Royale, which I was anxious to see because I really enjoyed Cabin in the Woods, but I heard it was not so hot. So
all right,
maybe not a great choice, but whatever. I'm sticking to it. All right. So you're going to read the opening paragraph, which is our opening scene of the movie, and then I'll come in and read the rest.
And if you've watched all 4 of these, then this will make sense. But we may need to explain it if you haven't.
Yeah, we'll explain it after.
Okay. We open on a woman stepping from an orb of electricity. She looks up at a familiar house. In the window is a young brunette, just looking out to see a young cotton weary walking out the front door. The girl in the window is Sydney Prescott from 1996. She goes back to bed, and when the lights turn off, Billy Loomis creeps from the bushes, a knife in hand. The woman intervenes, wielding her own knife. Billy asks who she is, and she says, "I'm Sydney, you son of a bitch, and you're not going to murder my mother!" She stabs Billy and presses a button on her watch, disappearing into another orb of electricity. The title card, Stab 5, flashes on the screen, and we cut to the real world.
The time travel.
Yeah, so it's the time travel.
From Stab 5. Time travel.
I think the year is actually wrong, because I think it's like a year or two before, so I got that wrong. So it would actually be like 94 or whatever when her mom was killed. So sorry, I got
still
that wrong.
Still good.
Okay, but now we move forward into 2020. Sydney Prescott has accepted that hiding from her haunted past can't keep her or anyone else from danger, and with her father aging and alone, she's moved back home to Woodsboro. The local townsfolk, however, have had enough, many residents fleeing for fear of yet another sequel to the bloody Ghostface saga. Real estate all over town has been vacated, and there's been little interest in newcomers risking their lives for a cheap deal. That is, until rumor spreads that a company has purchased almost every available lot, most notably the sites of previous Ghostface murders. Dewey, Gale, and Sydney are suspicious of the events, and when it's revealed that the company who bought the properties has turned them into a haunted crime scene tour celebrating all the horrific murders, they need to know what it's all about. As a group, the Scream Trio decide to take the frightful tour, a virtual reality reenactment of all the famous Ghostface murders across Woodsboro. Sydney, having moved into a new home with her father, is able to revisit her old house. With the VR glasses on, she not only sees each room as it was when she lived there in high school, but she sees a digital version of herself in her room with Billy, the night when, for her, it all began. She watches as Ghostface appears and terrorizes her, and she is shaken with terror. The tour continues to Stu Mocker's old house, where they watch her late friend Tatum Riley get crushed in the garage door, Gail's cameraman murdered outside the TV van. They watch Digital Billy and Stu give their explanation of the events and motivations, only Stu's dialogue is different than she remembers. His behavior with Digital Sydney is downplayed, her attack on him seemingly unprovoked and undeserved. When the tour's over and their glasses are removed, the real-life Stu Mocker is standing in his living room. His face is scarred, his eyes white and unseeing, yet he's smiling that ridiculous Stu smile. It seems Stu didn't die that night long ago, and without solid evidence of him murdering anyone, you know, it's his word against Billy's, and Billy died, he was only in prison for attempted murder and accessory to murder. After 2 decades served, and with good behavior, he was eventually released. It's his company that bought the Ghostface murder locations, and he's brought it all back to life to bring Stab fans and true crime fans pouring into the small town. Sydney is outraged, Gale's excited, and Dewey is realizing there's no legal way to fight the invasion. Until during one of the virtual tours, someone actually gets murdered. An investigation begins, shutting down the tours, and Stu is enraged. He's losing money and has several mortgages to pay now. The murders continue, and with so many strangers in town, it's impossible to know who the killer might be. We get a series of killings, and suspects are brought in, then dismissed. Stu is presented as the prime suspect, but his motivations are double-edged. More people take new interest in the tour, but he can't give the tour until the killer is caught. Even when Stu is arrested, another murder takes place. But they question that he may have an accomplice, of course. Eventually, they set him free, and with Stu blind, we get a lights-out experience with just sound as Stu is stalked and then murdered for real this time. Unbeknownst to the killer, unbeknownst to us, Stu was sent out as bait, and the killer is caught. It's Sydney's father, just like he was suspected so long ago.
Twist.
Yeah, he was furious over Stu's resurgence of the Ghostface horrors and wanted to rid the town and his daughter of a past they could never seem to escape, though he only confesses to the first murder. Once her father's in prison and Stu is dead, the murders have stopped. To appease the public, Dewey concludes that one or both of the men were responsible for all of the murders. Case closed. Then we cut to a sequence of characters briefly highlighted throughout the movie, hiding masks and knives, tearing up photos of the dead, implying that at least half a dozen others carried out the killings, each with their own motivations. A voiceover from Sydney explains that there is no end to Ghostface. As long as anyone feels the urge to kill, as long as they feel the desire to take up the blade and don the mask, he will live on. The screams will echo forever.
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 Scream 5. Echo. 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 Oh, that's nice. That's good. I didn't see the dad. I didn't see it happening.
Well, they always wanted it to be him, so I thought it'd be fun if it was.
He needed to have some use.
Yeah. And we could call it Scream
Forever.
I hope he
went to acting school between the films and now, because he was not good in the early movies.
Scream Infinity.
McScreamy.
Plus one.
McScreamy.
That's what Scream 3 should be. All right.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Shush.
I like the opening is killer. The fact that she used the time travel bit that they referenced was so good.
Oh, I couldn't resist. I thought that'd be so much fun.
Hello. That was my idea.
Yeah. I would like.
I was wondering about that when they said it. I was like, "Oh, I'd like to see that. Can we get the Stab movie?"
That's what I'm thinking. We need Stab 5 to come out, just independent, kind of like what is the one Bill Cosby,
Leonard Part 7,
Leonard Part whatever was
or
it
6, whatever
Eight?
It was. Yeah,
I don't remember. Anyway, yeah. So I think that'd be a lot of fun. All right, but whether they make those or not, they're making one. The retake, it was originally said that it was going to be a reboot, but since then...
You sounded really Canadian when you said that. Reboot.
Reboot.
That's a real word.
It's a boot to be a reboot.
It's a boot.
But it is actually going to be a continuation as were our pitches.
Your pitches, eh?
It's been 11 years since Scream 4, and this I would not consider the average continuation of the franchise, especially since we're losing Wes Craven from direction. So I'm still considering this a reboot. And you know what? If you don't like it, tough, because it's in our podcast now forever, and we define what's a reboot. status is it's filming. And suppose, you know, release dates don't mean anything. Who cares anymore?
They don't.
Sometime in the future, a new installment of the Scream horror franchise will follow a woman returning to her hometown to try to find out who has been committing a series of vicious crimes. If I'm Sydney, I'm just going to kill myself at this point.
Really?
Just, I mean, really, just who cares? Like, just so what? Stop it. So what? this is directed by Matt Bettinelli Olpin. He did lots of shorts, a segment from the movie VHS, segments of Southbound.
Segment. Okay.
Devil's Do, and Ready or Not, along with Tyler Gillett co-directing here, who also did some TV and shorts, then seemed to align with Bettinelli open on VHS, Devil's Do, Southbound, and Ready or Not. They both directed that. We loved Ready or Not.
Ready or Not was great.
That was a lot of fun.
It's really fun.
It was really cool.
I saw that.
This is going to star Courtney, Nev, David, and Marley Shelton's going to come back because I had forgotten that she lived in the end of Scream 4.
Marley Shelton?
She's the deputy, the blonde that loves Dewey. Yeah, so okay. I think that'll be fun. Jack Quaid is a newcomer here. You'll know him from Hunger Games, Logan Lucky. He was Richie Rich on Harvey Girls Forever, which I have no idea what that is. Huey Campbell on The Boys. Jenna Ortega is in this. Okay. And again, I'm listing... a lot of names, but I have no idea if anybody's going to be in, like, the 2 second star or whatever. So who knows? Jenna Ortega's in this. She's from Insidious Chapter 2, Iron Man 3, also in The Babysitter Killer Queen. Kyle Gallner. He was in Red State. He played Cassie Casablancas on Veronica Mars.
The Red Planet.
Hazel. Very good. Farrell on Outsiders. Got anything for that? Dylan Minnette is in this. Was in Goosebumps, Don't Breathe, Prisoners. Played Clay Norman on Saving Grace and Clay Jensen on 13 Reasons Why. The Clay is silent. Mikey Madison was Max.
Did you say Clay?
On Better Things. Mason Gooding was in Booksmart, Love, Victor, and Let It Snow. And Melissa Barrera. Can you... do that with some more R's. Okay. Lots of Spanish television, notably Lynn on Vida. Yeah, it's no Marca del Deseo.
You want some quality TV, watch El Marca del Deseo.
La Marca del Deseo.
La Marca del Deseo. Nice. Excuse me.
See, let me tell you what. No, okay. No. We don't have time. It's the best show on television.
It's best.
Jasmine Savoy Brown played Allison Adams on For the People. And finally, Sonia Amar. Who didn't do
you just
much.
Wrote not much.
Not much.
I thought it was something called not much, but I knew he'd capitalize it if that were the case.
I do try and stick with the capitalization.
You should just wrote who?
And we talked a little bit about this on the live podcast. If you're not catching those, you need to come join us for those. So please follow us on YouTube and you'll get notified of when we're going to be live again. But Nev Campbell was talking a few months back about when it was officially announced her being in the project. She explained that she was with the director's approach to the film and how they wanted to preserve Wes Craven's spirit. She says, they wrote a letter to me expressing what great fans of Wes's work they are and how honored they are that they're getting a chance to make Scream 5 because the Scream franchise is the reason that they're now directors. And that's
nice.
That's really cool. So, yeah, not only do we enjoy Ready or Not, but I love that sentiment that these guys were big fans. And that's exactly who should be making this movie.
Bet we get a ton of callbacks and Easter eggs to the original films then from these guys. If you're a fan, you have to work in as much of that as humanly possible.
Yeah. So it is a shame that we don't have Wes anymore at all, much less for the Scream franchise. But yeah, I'm actually looking forward to this because we did have a lot of fun on the fourth one. And mm-hmm. So if they and that was one of the things that I thought Ready or Not was like one of those fun horror.
I loved the end of that movie.
Yeah.
The end is so good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is actually going to be pretty good and I'm looking forward to it. All right. Let's do some trivia.
Trivia.
I ask a question. If you get it right, Steve lives.
Please don't do this.
Come on, it'll be fun.
Please.
It's an easy category.
Please.
Movie trivia.
The party scene near the end of the film runs 42 minutes long. It was shot over the course of 21 days from the time the sun set to the time it rose. After it wrapped, the crew had t-shirts made that read, I Survived Scene 118, which was the name of the scene during shooting. The cast and crew jokingly called it the longest night in horror history.
Oh, that's
crazy.
I think
Shelley Duvall would argue with that.
Mm-hmm. At around 12 minutes at the beginning of the movie when Casey's, Drew Barrymore's parents come home to find something is wrong, her father tells her mother to go to the McKenzies, which is the same thing Lori, Jamie Lee Curtis, told Lindsay, Kyle Richards, and Tommy to do in Halloween from 1978, of which this movie contains many references. Scream mm-hmm. Queen, Jamie Lee Curtis.
The high school scenes were to be shot at Santa Rosa High School in California. However, very close to the shooting date, the school board read the script and denied the film to be shot there due to the violent nature. They thought it was going to be a comedy. And production was moved to Healdsburg, California. As payback, director Wes Craven put in the end credits under the special thanks section, no thanks whatsoever to the Santa Rosa City School District Governing Board. Slam! Drop the mic. I'm out.
The use of caller ID increased more than threefold after the release of the film.
Yeah. I had completely forgotten about those caller ID boxes until watching the movie. I was like, oh, snap, that was a thing for a while.
I remember
Yeah, you had to attach it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Drew Barrymore and Neve Campbell did not meet Roger Jackson, the actor who played the voice, before shooting commenced. Whenever they are talking on the phone to the killer, they are actually talking to him. In fact, none of the cast met him. Craven thought that would be better to bring out the shock reactions he needed from everyone when they heard the voice.
Yeah,
that was cool. One of the three questions at the beginning.
You're right. I assume they eventually met him. It'd be pretty lame if he was never invited to the casting parties. he just phoned in at around
He's
2
the killer
minutes.
In 5.
Yeah, that's right. I'm like, I need this franchise to return. I gotta have some work. At around 2 minutes, Casey, Drew Barrymore, claims that all of the sequels to A Nightmare on Elm Street sucked. Wes Craven sold the rights to the sequels before the film was released and became a success and disliked many of the sequels.
The special effects artist used about 50 gallons of blood. I think it's the fake blood.
It's what it said. I think it was real blood.
Being a favorite of screenwriter Kevin Williamson, Molly Ringwald was offered the role of Sidney Prescott, but turned it down, saying she'd rather not be playing a high school student at the age of 27. What? She was only 27 when the first one was made?
I know.
Holy cow.
Probably still looks 16.
Yeah.
At that point, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now she's a mom on Riverdale alongside Skeet Ulrich, ironically.
Oh, interesting. Is it me?
Yep.
In this movie, the teens are watching Halloween. In Halloween H2O, the teens are watching Scream 2.
What?
Oh, that's cool.
That is cool.
At around 54 minutes, Tatum, Rose McGowan, says that the situation is like a Wes Carpenter movie. This is a reference to Wes Craven, who directed the movie, and John Carpenter, I can't read, and John Carpenter, who directed Halloween.
Yeah, I caught that, and I was like, wait, something about that doesn't sound right.
Mm-hmm.
Skeet Ulrich was cast as Billy Loomis partly because of his resemblance to Johnny Depp, who had a significant role in A Nightmare on Elm Street, 1984.
Mm. Melissa Joan Hart, Brittany Murphy, Alicia Witt, Melanie Lynskey, and Melinda Clark auditioned for the role of Sidney Prescott.
Was Sandra Bullock.
I'm sure she was there. She just assumed she had the role.
Bob Weinstein approached Robert Rodriguez, Danny Boyle, George A. Romero, and Sam Raimi to direct. Kevin Williamson said that they didn't get it. He was concerned that having read the script, many of the directors believed the film to be purely a comedy. Ironically enough, Rodriguez would direct the footage for the fictional in-universe film Stab.
Oh, wait, he really did direct that stuff?
Yeah, he
did. I thought that was just a shout-out to him. Oh, my God, that's awesome.
He actually directed all those.
That makes my choice for five even better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, now I want to read the script and, like, did it really come across that way as a comedy? Like, I guess. Yeah, if you don't go in, if you can't see the murders, like if you're just reading somebody get stabbed,
yeah.
I guess it could have been played comically. Hmm.
Well, basically they made those. They're called Scary Movie.
Right.
They had that series.
And that was the working title of this movie, I believe.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
The sheriff is played by Joseph Whipp, the same actor who played a police officer in A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, I love that.
That is cool.
So those were all from one. Now we got some trivia from Scream 2. Scream Dose. At around 54 minutes in Scream, Tatum asks Sydney, if they make a movie about you, who's going to play you? Sydney answers, with my luck, they'd cast Tori Spelling. Then in Stab, the movie within a movie, Tori Spelling plays Sydney.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Various titles were considered for the sequel at different points in the film's production, including Scream Again, Scream Louder, and Scream, the sequel.
And see, that's funny, though.
Scream Louder?
No, the sequel.
Scream the sequel?
But I guess I didn't want to be too comical. So yeah, I kind of like, I'm changing my Scream 5 to Scream Forever.
Scream Forever?
Yeah, I think that's cool.
Scream Forever.
Which, eventually you can't, you need to get some water or something, but you get the idea. The film originally ended with a shot with another ghost face watching over from the campus's bell tower. There is fan speculation that that's the killer from Scream 3, Under the Mask.
Ooh. Originally scheduled to open alongside Tomorrow Never Dies in 1997 and Titanic, both blockbusters shifted their date so as not to be pitted against this movie. Holy cow. Titanic, really? Isn't that still, like, other than Avatar, one of the all-time grossing films? And they were scared about going up against Scream 2.
Yeah, I hope that's true because that is really awesome.
Yeah, it is.
That Scream was so strong that they're like, no, we can't do it. We'll have a different date. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Right, looks like we're moving into Scream 3 trivia now. Wes Craven filmed three different endings and didn't tell the cast which one he was going to use. That trickster.
Patrick Dempsey was hired the day before shooting began. He had one night to learn three big dialogue-heavy scenes.
I think that's true.
There's plenty of ladies who didn't hear a word he said anyway, so it worked out just fine.
Yeah, fair.
A big twist was planned for the killings to be caused by insane fans of the Stab movies. The twist would come where Sydney, Nev Campbell, visited a house where all the teenagers had been killed, only for the bodies to get up and reveal themselves as the killers. Ooh.
What? Very weird.
It was all fake.
Courtney Cox remarked about her relationship with then-husband David Arquette in relation to the Scream franchise. I was just flirting with David on the first one. I was sleeping with him in the second one, and we shared a trailer in the third.
And then the fourth one, they were divorced.
Jeez.
Oof.
That's crazy. Yeah, like that franchise spans their entire relationship.
Weird. Because the hair.
Large amounts of footage were filmed due to the script constantly changing. Randy, Jamie Kennedy's video message, a three-minute scene, had over 2 hours of footage filmed for it.
Jesus.
He was really covering the bases, I guess.
I guess.
Kate Hudson was cast, but replaced prior to the commencement of principal photography. This movie is listed among Hudson's credits on the back cover of the VHS of Desert Blue in 1998. The role in which Hudson was cast is unknown, but speculation is that it was either Christine or Sarah. Hmm.
In a 2009 interview, Matthew Lillard claimed that he had been contracted to reprise his role on the as the primary antagonist, having survived his apparent death in Scream, 1996, orchestrating new Ghostface attacks from prison on high school students and ultimately targeting Sidney Neve Campbell. Following the Columbine High School massacre shortly before production began, the script was scrapped and rewritten without his character and this plot to avoid development of a film which associated violence and murder with a high school setting. Mm. See, that's why 3 sucked, because they had to write in a big hurry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Compared to its 2 predecessors, this film used the least amount of artificial blood. Its tally of 10 gallons compares with 50 gallons for Scream and 30 for Scream 2. Just more, you should add more blood.
Mm-hmm. It's like when Tom Cruise runs in a movie, it's more successful. Use more blood to be more successful.
Just more running.
An alternate opening was written but never filmed. The opening scene contained Sydney Prescott and a friend of hers alone in her house, in a different state, getting ready to watch a video. Unbeknownst to Sydney, the killer calls Sydney and her friend, claiming that he is in the house watching them, which turns out to be true. The killer jumps out from a closet and attempts to attack a frightened Sydney and her friend. Sydney, however, pulls out a gun and shoots the killer several times. Upon unmasking him, the killer turned out to be the fan who was pulling a prank on Sydney.
It's like from that would have been a great beginning.
Like Zombieland when they shoot
Bill Murray.
You think you'll make it? No. Okay. Trivia for part 4. In the deleted scenes, Dewey explains to Gail that Neil Prescott, Lauren Hecht, Sydney's father, has passed away since appearing in Scream 3, and this is the first time Sydney has returned to Woodsboro since his death.
Mm. So that wouldn't have worked for mine, but... I don't think they say he's dead in the 4th one, is he? Isn't he in the... I can't remember.
Who cares?
Yeah, whatever.
He's in 3rd or 4th, yeah.
Yeah, he's in the 3rd one, I think. At around 6 minutes in the scene where Ginny Amy Teagarden, which sounds, that's a nice name, explains to Marnie, Britt Robertson, the story about the Stab movie, she says Stab 5 has time travel, which is by far the worst. Wes Craven had the idea of time travel in dreams for A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master, but the studio rejected it.
For the first time in the franchise, a CGI added knife was used because director Wes Craven wanted to avoid using prop knives that are rubber, cardboard, and collapsible.
I didn't really notice. I guess it's not anything you look for. That's
what they do in the Walking Dead. They have these like handles that just have like a little bit of a green deal sticking off the end, I guess, to get the motion and stuff correct.
Okay.
So they don't accidentally stab somebody in the head or whatever when they're taking out zombies.
Always a good idea.
Yeah, thanks. Is it you?
I think so.
Whatever.
At around 18 minutes, a bust of Henry Winkler, former principal in Scream, can be seen briefly in the hallway.
I caught that.
What?
Is this some kind of
I didn't
books?
See that.
It's very impressive, yes. Kevin Williamson, the writer of this film, has expressed a subtle annoyance towards the release of the film. During production, producers Bob and Harvey Weinstein brought in Erin Kruger, the writer of Scream 3. Why? To polish up the script. Why? Wes Craven later stated that the main idea, story, and concept of the movie were written by Williamson with minor changes made by Kruger. I'm sure they're the worst parts.
Yeah.
Probably. Deputy Perkins' first name is Anthony, making his name Anthony Perkins, the same name as the actor who played Norman Bates in the Psycho film franchise.
Dewey's limp, a result of a stab wound in the first film and shown to be quite prominent in the sequels, is no longer present. Though not explained on screen, the script dismisses it quickly with a screen direction note. His limp is nearly non-existent. Years of physical therapy. And it just looked a little stupid.
Yeah, it was.
It looked badly done, and I wondered that when I was watching the 4th one. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah. I actually had forgotten by the 4th one. I had noticed, I think, in 3 that it was diminished.
Like, actually, I didn't mind the limp. It was the arm thing.
Yeah, where he's
holding his arm.
The claw.
Yeah. The claw.
But
yeah. That just looked, it wasn't well done.
Yeah.
Like Chris Elliott in the scary movies. He's got the one little limp hand.
Yeah, you got to stay away from, what was it?
That the must turkey have scene? Come from that.
Yeah, I guess so. That makes sense. Okay, well, this was a lot of fun as usual. Don't forget, we've got a giveaway coming up. So you're going to want to gather those keywords, which means go back and enjoy our podcast again. Don't just fast forward to the keyword. Listen again all the way through. And if you haven't seen these yet, go watch them. They're great. And we thank you again for stopping by. Make sure to subscribe and like and favorite and follow and all those wonderful things.
All those things. I sure do. It's a hoot.
Don't pollute.
Nerds you newt.
Oh, God. Okay. All right. That was a scream.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.